Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And good day. Here we are. It's Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz checking in, and got a whole lot to get to today, especially with this weekend being the drafts for my two baseball leagues, one of which happened on Thursday night for the Keeper League, and tomorrow the big auction draft, second year with that league, and many of the same players are in both leagues. And at some point in the not-too-distant future, I anticipate these leagues probably eliminating the keeper teams and just sticking with the auction leagues, which are much deeper. I've also got basketball going on, and kind of the same two formats, a keeper league and an auction league going. We're only about a week or so away from the fantasy basketball playoffs, so that's going to be something to keep an eye on. And at this point of the year, you know, you kind of sort of know if you're going to qualify for the playoffs or not. At this point, it's a matter of maybe getting your healthy players right and making sure that you got healthy players or players who are getting playing time heading into the next few weeks. And sometimes that might be players on average teams who are fighting to make the playoffs or, you know, fighting to stay in contention. They're going to be playing a little bit more intense basketball where some teams might, in the next few weeks, start resting players, bringing in other players off the bench to give them a little bit of experience and tinker with their lineups and matchups and basically kind of rest some of the star players and keep some of the wear and tear off of them heading into the playoffs. So NBA almost in their playoff season, and that's actually when a lot of casual fans begin to watch the game. The series become, you know, pretty intense, and that's where, you know, the coaching and the matchups really determine, you know, who's going to advance. In fantasy sports, it's kind of the same, but, you know, again, you're going off the players in your team, and I have no real control if, you know, if LeBron James is going to sit out a game or not heading into the playoffs. So that's something to keep an eye on if you're dealing with playoffs coming up, hopefully you are, in your fantasy basketball season. And again, baseball is pretty much here. Spring training, catchers and pitchers reported a few weeks ago. And there's been a pretty quiet spring training. There hasn't been a lot of big trades. There hasn't been a lot of free agent signings. And luckily, knock on wood, the injuries have been kept a little bit more to a minimum from seasons past. Like last year, you know, I had a couple guys already out for a significant amount of time before spring training was even over. So that put a bit of a dark cloud on last year's team and ended up finishing 10th place out of 12. Not proud of that. But again, if you've listened to some of the past shows, like a couple of weeks ago, I think I had a show called This Year or Next Year is Here. And I think I did a good job of, you know, setting up for the following season. Now, a lot of fantasy players, they don't have the patience for that. That's why daily fantasy kind of became a thing, you know? People would draft their teams at the beginning of the season, maybe a couple weeks in, they're on a bit of a losing streak, or some of the key players are down and won't be available for some period of time. And again, dark cloud over the season, and a lot of folks, you know, kind of just threw in the towel. And that's, you know, when the daily fantasy picking began. And that's actually kind of a lot of fun for folks who maybe don't have the patience or, you know, wherewithal to go through a season and actually, you know, putting up with a struggle. Personally, I think it's during those down times when your team isn't doing so well, Yeah, that's where you find out a little bit more of what kind of manager you are. You know, what are you going to do to improve your team? Is there a way you can improve it? You know, do you start considering, you know, lots of trades? Do you start combing the waiver wire? Those are things I think are both good ways to help improve the team and, you know, keep you active during the season. And if nothing else, you should be, you know, looking at folks on the waiver wire, especially in these kind of format leagues that I'm in, you know, keeper and dynasty league, where there might be a good young player getting some playing time, maybe not on a great team. And that player might not even be on that, you know, team next year, whatever that team is, whether they're team chasing the playoffs or, you know, a team struggling to make it or, you know, a team that's going to be in a rebuild next year. You know, maybe that player does well down the stretch, might be involved in a trade, you know, in real basketball, might end up in a better situation, you know, for them, depending on the team, the coaching and the philosophy and how minutes are doled out and how productive they actually can be. So those are things to kind of watch in the upcoming weeks heading into the playoff season for fantasy basketball. Also, in the last week or so, it's been quite hot and heavy in the National Football League. The new season officially started this week. And it was interesting because I think Monday and Tuesday was like the tamper-free zone where teams could talk to players and, you know, start negotiating contracts and possible signings, possible trades, and stuff like that. And I think the Wednesday the 13th was when the season became official. And players could actually go in and ink on the contracts, and the new season becomes official. Then, of course, coming up in April will be the NFL draft. That will be kind of another big building block to what's going to happen in the National Football League. And if you're a fantasy football player, it's not too early to start looking at next year. Again, depending on the league you're in. Are you in a keeper? Are you in a dynasty league, auction, snake draft, what have you? Are you keeping players, or is it a complete redraft each and every year? Actually, in football, the redraft is probably the most popular kind of format because in the NFL, the fact that players do get injured a lot more every single game is a potential of serious injury, just the nature of football in general, you know, compared to basketball and baseball and even hockey, if you do that, where injuries, yes, do happen, but sometimes they're, you know, not quite so serious or sometimes career ending, like in the National Football League. So that's something, you know, to start taking a look at what's some of the key players that have moved. This year, a lot of running backs seem to be the most popular free agent signing, which is kind of interesting and maybe good for them, for the running back union. There was a collective thought among National Football League front office, general managers, you know, what have you. And that makes some sense, and not, you know, paying extra money or high amount of money or guaranteed contracts for, you know, running backs in general, especially if they've already been in the league 4 or 5 years and are maybe up for that, you know, next contract. Generally, that's where players are going to get, you know, a higher dollar and are going to be in their higher earning amount. They're out of the rookie contracts that they signed coming out of college. And, you know, before you start complaining about, you know, the rookie contracts, that became a thing a number of years ago. I think Sam Bradford was the breaking point. He was a quarterback. I think he graduated or finished his college career with Oklahoma, usually a very good team. He usually has a couple players go into the pros. He ended up being drafted by the then St. Louis Rams, and his contract was huge. And, of course, a lot of players who were already in the league were a little besmirched by the fact that some kid who hasn't played it down in the NFL is making a lot more money than they were based off potential, which is where many of these contracts are based off in the off season after the initial team building. And in football, that's going to be through the draft. That's the smartest, best way to get a number of talented players in there, filling a lot of positions and generally at a cheaper price. And you get to that point, you're either in a, you know, depending on if you're A, B, or C level, are you an A team that's maybe going to have a shot, a short window and some talent and maybe making a run for the playoffs or the Super Bowl? Are you on a B level, a team that maybe gets to the playoffs but can't seem to advance past a particular round or maybe a particular team in the conference? Right now, that would be the Kansas City Chiefs. Seems like nobody can get past them. But take a look at the AFC West, where the Chiefs do play. And that division looks to be, you know, quite competitive. Of course, everyone is shooting for the champions. And if you sort of build your philosophy or your focus around, you know, trying to beat that team, that's going to essentially help you in the long run, because they're both the champions and you get a chance to play them twice a year. So if you, you know, kind of put your stock up against theirs and can compete favorably, then you have a good chance of doing well against the rest of the league. And right now, case in point, the Chiefs in the AFC West, you know, they're in a spot where they can go out and, you know, and maybe do a bit of a spot recruiting, where a couple seasons ago, the Patriots had a long run where they were able to kind of go out and maybe get a free agent to come to their team for maybe a little less than market value and kind of sell them on the aspect that, you know, we're a championship organization. Things are going to go pretty well here. We're focused on winning, taking care of our people, and, you know, maybe take a little less, but be on a team that, you know, we have a very good feeling is going to be, you know, heading to the playoffs. So the Chiefs have kind of, you know, moved into that position as the current dynasty in the National Football League. Take a look at the rest of their division, and in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of turnover, especially the past 2 years, and especially in this offseason. You got the Denver Broncos with Coach Sean Payton, and you know he decided he can't deal with quarterback Russell Wilson. They released Wilson, even though the team had made a huge trade just a season before. And are going to end up basically having a lot of dead cap money against their ability to sign other free agents and draft picks and rebuild a team. So Denver Broncos are looking to be in a complete overhaul just by releasing quarterback Russell Wilson. Now, had they kept him, they still would have been in a bit of a pinch because he was guaranteed so much money in the contract extension signed during the trade. Take a look at the Seahawks, who traded Wilson, and they're in a much better position the last two seasons. Two seasons ago, maybe ahead of schedule, finished 9-8. Last year, maybe behind schedule, finished at 9-8 again. And that led to the dismissal of Pete Carroll. I think part of that had him just thinking at one point that he might want to retire. And then at the end of the season, I think he had second thoughts. But once you kind of put that thought out there, it's kind of hard to take it back. You know, it's sort of, sort of like posting on the internet, hard to get that thing down once you've put something up and you find out that someone has a different sub-opinion on you or something like that. So that's a few things heading into the upcoming football season. You got Denver in a complete rebuild. The LA Chargers are also in a rebuild. I kind of think they're going to get there a little sooner than the Broncos. Number one, they do have quarterback Justin Herbert. Some folks think he might be a little overrated, maybe a little overvalued. He was a quarterback who stepped in as a rookie due to a freak injury to then-starting quarterback Tyrod Taylor, who had a rib injury, went to get a pain-killing injection, and somehow a pain-killing shot to the ribs ended up puncturing the guy's lung. I mean, you know, this is pretty serious stuff, and this happened like the morning of a game. So, you know, dude's got a sore rib. Now he's got a punctured lung. Obviously, he's not in a shape to play football, nor should he in that particular case. And Justin Herbert came in and played pretty well for a rookie. It was against the, at that time, they were defending Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs. Justin Herbert's done fairly well. Part of the accusations on him being a little overrated, I don't think, are completely his fault. I think some of it had to do with the coaching philosophy with the Chargers and what they were and weren't doing. Mainly, I think they're trying to live too much on his ability and passing with injuries to the wide receivers, both of which are no longer with the team, as the Chargers had to shed some salary cap to get compliant this week. They renegotiated a few contracts with Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, a couple of their defensive stars, to free up some money. Basically, there's a way you can kind of do that. The players end up taking less of a base salary for the season, and probably in the renegotiation we're given, you know, something like a nice fat signing bonus, which, you know, there's ways it doesn't go against the salary cap. You know, the team is still giving them some money or deferring it somehow in a, you know, in lieu of just releasing them and making them go through the process of free agency, which sometimes isn't so bad, but at the same time, you know, you're a team that's rebuilding, and so we can do with a couple of your best players and renegotiate them. A couple wide receivers no longer with them. That would be Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, a couple very talented receivers who did very well when they were on the field. Problem, they were often injured and were barely on the field together at the same time for so many games for the Chargers, so that made it difficult. And then there was a statistic I saw about a year ago as I was looking at a Charger game coming up, and, you know, there was a statistic that said if they ran the ball more than 25 times a game, their win-loss record was much higher for wins than losses. And in games where they threw for more than whatever the number, I think 25, they are 500 or less. So, interesting, because the Chargers are a team whose coach was fully invested in analytics and statistics like this, and it was just kind of baffling that they didn't see that as well, and especially a defensive-minded coach, Brandon Staley, who defensive-minded coaches, you know, would be fine with running the ball almost 90% of the game, passing when they needed to, and just playing good defense. Case in point, Pete Carroll of the Seahawks, I think he'd be happy winning every game like 16-9, 13-9 even, maybe getting one touchdown, three field goals, and holding the other team to like two or three field goals is kind of his perfect game. Where that was where I think some of the Russell Wilson unhappiness stemmed from. Wilson thought he should be a little bit more of a leader and the guy who was shouldered with the responsibility of winning games. But the Chargers moved on, and Jim Harbaugh is the coach. Bottom line, they're going to turn it around. Jim Harbaugh has been a winner everywhere he's been as a coach. He was a pretty good player, too. University of Michigan, and also a coach and a player. He played for Mike Ditka with the Chicago Bears. He's a member of the Indianapolis Colts, led them to within a couple plays of going to a Super Bowl. Even though they had a 9-7 record, they had a pretty good run as the wild card team and came within a Hail Mary pass on the last play of the game to defeat the Steelers and go on to a Super Bowl, which the Steelers and Dallas Cowboys eventually met up in that game. So his coaching career, Harbaugh, started at University of San Diego, turned them around, went to Stanford, really turned them around. Stanford, a little bit more known for, occasionally they'll have a good football team, but a little bit better at basketball and baseball. And, you know, bottom line, that's a place I think that truly recruits student athletes, because, you know, if you're an athlete and you got a scholarship to Stanford, you probably want to take that scholarship and, you know, go to Stanford. Whether you're A, B, or C student, just the fact that you go, hey, I graduated from Stanford, that's going to open a number of doors for you in life. A lot of colleges do that, not all to the degree of Stanford. That's one of those out of the Ivy League that is pretty reputable and, you know, is going to put your resume to the top. So they honestly did a great job in recruiting offensive linemen. Offensive linemen, for those who don't really follow it or know, you know, they don't get a lot of the same credit that the skill position players do, the quarterbacks, receivers, defensive backs, running backs, stuff like that, or even the defensive linemen who, you know, get the glory with pass rushes and stuff like that. The offensive linemen, they're in the trenches. They have to play a little bit more as a unit. And for whatever reason, offensive linemen, while they're a quiet but very necessary part of the game, they tend to be the smartest guys on the field. That's just kind of how it goes. So many offensive linemen are more than happy to go to a really good school, get a really great degree in whatever their selective choice of study is, and then go on from there. So Jim Harbaugh did a great job and recognized that. He brought in some very talented linemen, And I think the turning point and really put Harbaugh on the map for me was a game where they're a 30-something, I think 38-point underdog to USC, then coached by Pete Carroll. And then at that point, USC was a perennial challenger for the national championship. They had, you know, Heisman winners and were a, you know, high-quality team. Anyway, Stanford came into the L.A. Coliseum and destroyed USC, mainly on just the running game, mainly with those big, strong offensive linemen just playing together and outplaying USC to the tune of defeating the Trojans by 30-something points as a 30-point underdog. And I think there's a play in the fourth quarter where Stanford went for a 2-point conversion instead of just kicking a field goal, or might have tried to do a fake field goal and make it a conversion. And Pete Carroll and USC was not too happy about that. There was a famous exchange with Harbaugh and Carroll where Pete says, "Hey, man, what's your deal?" And then those two had a great rivalry with Harbaugh coaching the 49ers and Pete Carroll coaching the Seahawks. And, you know, within two or three seasons, you know, Jim Harbaugh is there in the Super Bowl, in which he and the Niners lost to his brother, John Harbaugh, current and has been coach for the Baltimore Ravens all that time. Probably would have stayed there, Jim Harbaugh, except the 49ers front office got a little uppity because, you know, the coach who was winning was becoming more popular than the owner, who, you know, bottom line, who cares about the owner? They're rich people, swimming in money. They can afford to buy a team. They can afford to hire coaches and pay players, and they make money off the overall National Football League success. And anyway, the York family got a little uppity because Harbaugh was having more success. So he went to Michigan, turned that around. There was a period where Michigan couldn't beat their arch rival, Ohio State, still one of the best rivalries in sports, especially in college football. I look forward to the Michigan-Ohio State game each and every year. And sorry, folks from Ohio, I've always rooted for Michigan in that particular rivalry, and that goes from my childhood of watching Ohio State and their controversial and, unless you're an Ohio State fan, not a lot of people liked Woody Hayes. His career eventually ended where he did a despicable thing of punching a player from the University of Clemson after that player made a qualifying key catch to basically wrap up the game, get a first down for Clemson. Happened right in front of the Ohio State bench, and Woody Hayes just went, you know, poor sport and basically bottom line a-hole, punched an opposing player. And I think, I'm not sure, but that opposing player was Dwight Clark, who went on to have quite a cool career with the San Francisco 49ers, mostly known for the catch against the Dallas Cowboys with Joe Montana and a couple Super Bowls with them. Dwight Clark eventually was in the front office of the 49ers, and I forgot exactly what his illness was, but he did die after, I believe it was some form of cancer for Dwight Clark. But anyway, Jim Harbaugh goes to Michigan, can't beat Ohio State for a couple years, and then has now beat them 3 years in a row, won a national championship, and was able to write his ticket to the pros. Chose the Charger job. There's a lot of good things going on, but there's a lot of issues there as well. And then the other team that I talk about often is the Las Vegas Raiders. They have officially named Antonio Pierce their coach. He was the interim coach last year, taking over after Josh McDaniels, who was probably in over his head as a head coach, seemingly a very talented offensive coordinator in years past. It helps if you're coordinating an offense led by Tom Brady. I think I could do that. Maybe not as successfully, but, you know, hey, Tom, just throw it to the open guy. I mean, you know, he's going to figure it out, and you know, kind of help him out as a coach and design things to get players open for him naturally. But Josh McDaniels bit in over his head as far as running the Raiders, and years before that when he was coach of the Denver Broncos, just not known as a leader among, you know, players. And anyway, Antonio Pierce, much different. Maybe not the mindset of the offensive coordinator and drawing up X's and O's, but he did play the game, was a successful linebacker with the New York Giants, and, you know, was able to get to the players in that locker room enough where, you know, many of them, including star defensive lineman Max Crosby, said, you know, if we don't keep Pierce, I'm going to request a trade. you know, therefore, you know, the Raiders kept him. I think it was a good choice. Other teams interviewed Antonio Pierce as well for defensive coordinator and head coaching position. So the players are going to play really hard for him, and it's a matter of if the coaching staff can get everything kind of going correctly. But they also hired general manager Tom Telesco from the Chargers, who was released of his duties after the Raiders and Chargers played on a Thursday night, in which the Raiders scored 63 points and were up something like 42-0 at halftime. The Chargers turned the page, and Brandon Staley and Tom Telesco from there. And Tom Telesco is now in charge of personnel with the Raiders. They made a couple key signings this week and did lose running back Josh Jacobs. And I was mentioning how the running backs last year, they had a Zoom meeting going, how are we going to get paid? You know, here we are on our fifth year, our first free agent contract, and our teams, you know, either want to give us the franchise tag, which, you know, limits certain things and limits the money. And then this year, so far this week, it seems like they've all moved on to a different team and moved into a higher pay rate. Josh Jacobs now a Green Bay Packer. Saquon Barkley from the Giants to the Eagles. The Eagles had DeAndre Swift. He is now with the Chicago Bears. Derrick Henry of the Tennessee Titans is now Derrick Henry of the Baltimore Ravens. And he was deemed expendable by the Titans after they picked up Dallas Cowboys running back Tony Pollard. So that's about four or five major running backs who have changed cities and uniforms just this week. And they'll be looking for replacements on their other teams. But the Raiders have got to jump up on the rest of the teams in their division in trying to rebuild and catch the Chiefs. And one thing they do have is they played the Chiefs twice last year during Antonio Pierce's run in his nine games, of which the Raiders did go 5-4. They beat the Chiefs on Christmas Day in Kansas City, and they lost to them about a month before that during the regular season, but they did get out to a 14-0 lead, played fairly well. So there's a bit of that gap closing, and those players maybe believe that they can actually beat the Chiefs, which is halfway to getting there and doing it. A team like Kansas City, they might take a loss like that as a little bump on the road. They said it was a bit extra motivation for them in the Super Bowl, and you know, the rest is now kind of history. So free agency in the NFL, a big thing and something to keep attention to. We're going to come back and break down the draft for the Southside Stone Sox, my keeper league that went down last night. I'm Jay Cruz. It's Fantasy Sports Friday here on HealthyLife.net Radio.
When my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
And we're back. It's Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz, and started off the show kind of just going with some current events. Basketball playoffs coming up. The NFL free agents and new league has officially started, so there's a lot of change going on. And sometimes just watching the off-season and team building is just as exciting as watching the games on the field. At some point during the season, you know, teams start to look forward to next year, depending on if they're competing, how they're doing, and how the financial situation with their roster and, you know, chase for the playoffs is going. So always a lot of turnover and interesting roster moves. And as a fantasy sports player, that's always extremely interesting and fun to kind of watch and learn from in how, you know, other teams are in handling their business. So one of the teams that I am in charge of and in baseball fantasy is heading into our sixth year. I was lucky enough to win the first championship, struggled a couple seasons, was down near the bottom, and then last year finished in third place, which was a season that I rebuilt from the season before, where I was really having a lot of bad luck, made a couple trades, and got pretty deep close to the playoffs, and ended up finishing in third place last year off the folks that I kept and strategy going into last year's draft. So I kind of went with a bit of the same strategy, although a slight bit different. Some of my keepers, three of them were eligible to be kept in the last three rounds of the draft. So I had some superstar top 50 players that were at the last end of the draft. So I started off with having a lot more to pick at the top of the draft, including a first-round pick. And this is, you know, kind of a sort of a, I don't know if it's a warning or just a cautionary tale, if you will. You know, as many drafts as I have done over the years, and I'm familiar with the format, familiar with the Yahoo Sports platform, somehow last night when my turn came up, I had been looking on the relief pitcher page to kind of determine who would be the top relief pitcher. And for some reason, I couldn't get out of that page as my turn was coming up. So my first pick of the draft was not a bad player, not someone who is maybe unworthy of the number one pick, but looking back, a bit of a reach. I did grab Jordan Romano, relief pitcher of the Toronto Blue Jays. And you're thinking, who? Well, he was the relief pitcher with the most amount of saves over the last couple years and someone who's relatively healthy the last few years. And Toronto is a team that definitely competes for the American League East title and makes the playoffs, or at least makes a good push each and every year. So I think he's going to kind of consistently turn in those numbers, although my intention was to grab possibly the best offensive player on the board. Although the way it worked out, I had a pick in the first round. My second round was already spoken for, and I was skipped because I kept Matt Olson, first baseman of the Atlanta Braves. He led the major leagues in home runs last year with 54. He's been a very consistent guy, plays over 150 games every year. I just put him in at first base and don't have to worry so much about having to platoon or switch him up with another first baseman. So much so that I don't technically have a pure backup at first base for him because he'll be playing most of the games. So I still got Manny Machado of the Padres in round number three. I almost took him in round number one. So you could easily say that Romano and Machado could have flipped rounds and it wouldn't really have, you know, stood out so strange. But I have a feeling other owners in my league were like, well, Romano in the first round. What are you thinking? Anyway, it also did set the tone, got people to maybe look at relief pitchers a little sooner. That's kind of the bit of the title in today's philosophy of the show is, you know, position scarcity and productivity. And relief pitchers, there's probably about 10 to 12 that are really on a top level, really about 6 or 7 on the top level. And I had a feeling, anyway, it was better for my peace of mind to grab a relief closer as early as I could. I already had a good power hitter in Olson. And, you know, Machado has a little bit of an injury situation. He might be playing designated hitter to start off the season, getting over a late season surgery from last year. In pick number four, I took center fielder of the Miami Marlins, Jazz Chisholm, who I've had in past seasons. Normally I would be quote-unquote jazzed, pardon the pun, about grabbing him and having him on my team, except the last two seasons he's missed significant time with injuries. He's not going to be playing second base anymore. He had split time between second base and center field. The Marlins are moving him to pure center field now. My next pick, I sort of went for a player that statistically had the better numbers, even though I'm not as familiar with him as some other folks. Matt McClain, who's going to be the starting second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds. And, you know, there was a point where I almost kept the other second baseman of the Cincinnati Reds, Jonathan India, who did miss a significant amount of time late last year. And, you know, Matt McClain, while not doesn't get as much press or isn't as popular, is apparently going to be the starting second baseman for the Reds. I figured he would also qualify as middle infield. Blake Snell was a pitcher. I went ahead and grabbed him because he's probably the best player available, and I have him on my other keeper, my other auction league team. He is still a free agent and has not signed with a major league team yet. The Houston Astros, New York Yankees, San Francisco Giants, and maybe the Angels are the four teams still supposedly in talks to sign Blake Snell. With the season starting in just a couple weeks, I'm a little leery because he hasn't been in spring training and throwing. You know, although with a pitcher, it might not be the worst thing if they don't burn out in spring training. So anyway, I added him to what already should be a pretty formidable pitching staff. One of my other keepers was San Francisco Giant Logan Webb, and he came in draft round number 7. So that was the next pick. One player I had last year, former Mariner Teoscar Hernandez, well, he signed with the Dodgers. I didn't know if the Dodgers really needed him. I mean, they had just picked up Shohei Ohtani, the other pitcher coming over from Japan, who, had I not been locked in on the relief pitcher page, I probably would have picked him. Again, a technical error, not the worst thing, but I kind of thought grabbing the new Dodger pitcher would be a good thing for this particular team. I really focused on starting pitching, but Teoscar Hernandez had a pretty good season with the Mariners last year, and they had a run towards the playoffs and fell a little bit short. Anyway, Hernandez signed with the Dodgers in the offseason. That's going to be such a stacked lineup with Shohei Ohtani at DH, Freeman at first base. Mookie Betts is now the everyday shortstop. They got Muncy at third, Will Smith behind the plate. And, you know, now a pretty strong outfield with Hernandez going to be anchored down in right field. I did go for my second closer early, Kenley Jansen, pick round number 9. He's older than he, well, everyone's older than they were last year, obviously. But he's getting a little bit deeper into the 30s, and I think his age is slightly higher than his expected saves this year. Partly he's on a rebuilding team, the Boston Red Sox, and he should still get 25 to 30 saves, so he'll be a very good number 2 closer. And I wanted to get set up with at least 2 closers, with Blake Snell and the 2 keepers I had, Bobby Miller, who was my 25th round pick, pitcher of the Dodgers, and someone I signed late last year, and Logan Webb. I thought that was pretty good. By round 9, I'm assured of 3 high-quality starters and 2 high-quality relievers. So I kind of wanted to focus a little bit more on the position players, but every time it came up, there was a option to grab some more starting pitching. So I'm very happy with my starting pitching. The overall thing, I think I have a pretty good team, and it's interesting because it's a vastly different roster than the team in my other league. I try to often sometimes grab the same players because I have a high opinion of those players, and a lot of times that does really well. But in this particular draft last night, I don't know, I was just feeling like going with some different players and some different positions and a slightly different strategy. Shortstop Anthony Volpe of the New York Yankees, he ended up earning the starting job last year, struggled at the beginning and came along strong. And the fact the Yankees kept him going, you know, shows me that they have confidence in him. So it seems that he's going to be getting the playing time to develop and might be someone to keep potentially over Jeremy Peña next year. Jeremy Peña, the Astros, one of the guys I got in a trade 2 years ago, and I'm able to keep him in round 23. Even though, looking back, I probably should not have kept Peña and should have kept outfielder Estuary Ruiz of the Oakland A's because of his amazing base-stealing prowess. But again, he's on my other team, and I should have kept him over Jeremy Peña, but I wanted to stack my draft choices at the end of the rounds so I could draft supposedly higher level players at the higher top of the draft. So I think I kind of succeeded with that. One player who's on my dynasty team, current, just signed a contract with the San Francisco Giants, is George Soler, and his main outfield position is right field, although he played quite a bit of left field last year. Now in this league, you just don't throw out three outfielders. They have to qualify at right, left, or center field. So, you know, at this point, I grabbed Soler, and I'm not sure, but this is about the time I think Ruiz went just a couple picks before Soler. Otherwise, I probably would have grabbed Ruiz in the draft. I didn't protect him, and another owner grabbed him just before I was able to pick him up. But Soler coming over to San Francisco, DH, and I think at some point he'll qualify for left field as well. But I already had right fielder Teoscar Hernandez and Michael Harris of the Braves as a player I kept at center field. So at this point, I'm definitely looking for a left fielder and many of the available players. Oh, yeah, and Jazz Chisholm's a center fielder, so I pretty much had five outfielders and no official left fielder, although I think once the season starts, Soler will qualify at left field, as will another player that I picked up too. Next couple rounds, I went back to pitching. Arizona Diamondback Merrill Kelly. The Diamondbacks really came on strong in the late half of the year. One of those teams, like I was saying, watch who's getting hot at the second half of the season and pushing into the playoffs, because the Diamondbacks were so hot they ended up going to the World Series. Merrill Kelly, one of those players in Arizona, a pretty young, talented team all around. So I felt good about that. A player that I traded in my other league last year, Toronto pitcher Jose Berrios, who last year had a pretty good season, the year before not so good, and that's why he was available in last year's draft. I traded him last year to another owner and got Washington outfielder Lane Thomas, who I was unable to pick up in this draft, but thought Berrios was available, and he was a player I would have liked to have kept had I had that opportunity in the other league. At round 14, it was a bit of a reach. I'm going to admit that. I was hoping to pick up Tampa Bay Ray Isaac Paredes, who qualifies at all the infield positions except for shortstop, and he was taken just before my choice in this round came up. And I kind of reached, kind of panicked. I wanted to get somebody with that same position qualification. Again, productivity and position scarcity and players that can play more than one position become extremely valuable once you've basically got your starters kind of in place. And even though the player is 39 years old, I've had good luck when he's on my team, and that's Justin Turner. Watched him here with the Dodgers for a number of years. He's been a third baseman his entire career, but last year in Boston, you know, he played a lot of first base, designated hitter, and even qualifies at second base. So I picked him up, and I know it was pretty early. I should have maybe waited, but I wanted to get someone who could qualify at the corner position as a corner infielder and at least have a backup to my first baseman and third baseman. The only problem is that Turner will probably be my everyday corner infielder, which is an official position in the game. And if Machado or Olsen have a particular day off, or if Turner, you know, is injured, he was pretty healthy last year, but his age can be a concern. I may have to grab another player to take over the corner infield or specifically back up first base or third base. So that's kind of an Achilles heel on my team right now. And around this point of the draft, I also really realized I did not have a left fielder yet, and I still had no catcher. That was a position I basically decided to punt this year and figured I could just get two catchers later in the draft, because if you don't get one of the first top catchers, they're all really close to the same pack, so it doesn't matter in a big scheme of things there. So I grabbed Jonah Heim, catcher of the world champion Texas Rangers, and a guy who puts up pretty good numbers. Still looking for a left fielder. Brent Rooker of the Oakland A's was available. Again, I wanted Estuary Ruiz. Should have kept him. Kind of kicking myself over that. But Rooker put up 27 home runs last year and qualifies at left field and right field. And it was a choice between him or Lourdes Gurriel of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who just qualifies at left field only. And I was able to get him in the next round. And then a backup catcher, I took care of that position by getting Toronto's catcher, Danny Jensen, who hits for decent power, sometimes has some injury issues, but nonetheless, decent value in the 18th round. 35-year-old player, Whit Merrifield, he's bounced around the league. He was a Kansas City Royal for many years. He played with Toronto last year on a one-year deal, and then signed a one-year deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. He is a second baseman and sometimes plays left field. And, you know, even at over 30, he averages over 20 to 25 steals a year. Just right now, his role with the Philadelphia Phillies is not quite clear. Somehow, I know he's going to get in the lineup and is going to be someone who serve as a backup second baseman. And left field. So I thought that was a decent pick, especially in round 19. At this point, still looking for relief pitch help, and heading into round 20, I only had three more rounds to go because the last three rounds were, again, keepers. Jeremy Pena of the Astros at shortstop, Michael Harris in center field for the Atlanta Braves, and Bobby Miller, pitcher for the LA Dodgers. So I grabbed a relief pitcher from Milwaukee named Joel Payamps. He had come over last year to Milwaukee from Oakland, and at some point during the season ended up closing games because Devin Williams, the Milwaukee closer, ended up having an injury, and Williams is still dealing with the aftermath of that injury, and Joel Payamps might end up being the everyday closer in Milwaukee. So in round 20, that could be a pitcher that plays better than his projected statistics and ends up getting a number of plays and relief pitching closing opportunities with Milwaukee, a team that's in a slight rebuild this year. So I don't expect him to get really over 25 or 30 saves, but if he can get close to 20 as my number three closer, that's going to help out a lot. I grabbed Alex Verdugo, a player that I've like for a couple of years. He doesn't hit for power, doesn't get a lot of RBIs. What he does do, though, is he's a very good contact hitter and gets a very high batting average. He'd been in Boston for the last couple seasons, was part of the Mookie Betts trade from L.A. to Boston, and probably in Boston he was held responsible for the Mookie Betts trade, where he shouldn't be. It was the actually silly front office of Boston that really kind of gave Mookie Betts away to the Dodgers. And just a bizarre move. I think they're trying to save salary, but at the same time are still spending salary and end up signing a lot of ex-Dodgers in Boston after the Mookie Betts trade. But Verdugo, ironically, traded to the Yankees from the Red Sox, which is rare and ironic because normally you don't want to make a trade in your own division, and especially to your arch rivals. You know, Red Sox and Yankees, that's probably one of the longest-running rivalries in Major League Baseball. I'd say the Giants-Dodgers is also one of the longest-running rivalries, and you never see a Giant-Dodger trade, although oftentimes a player will leave one of the teams for free agency, and there is a little bit of exchange, but nothing that's necessarily planned. So Verdugo, he was also kind of he had a cool look, long hair, unshaven, nice beard, lots of tattoos. He's going to be in the Yankees organization, and the Yankees famously have a bit of a dress code. You know, no beards, no long hair. Mustaches are allowed, but we'll have to see. So he'll be a short hair looking Alex Verdugo, and playing, he does play all outfield positions at this point, only qualifying for right field, although he might end up playing a lot of left field as well. So I think by the time the season gets going, my left field position scarcity might be taken care of and spoken for. And then in round 22, what was my final pick for the draft, I grabbed relief pitcher Andrew Chafin, who's kind of a setup guy with the Diamondbacks last year, and he's like a kind of a big, burly guy. You would not be surprised if he rode a motorcycle to games, specifically a Harley-Davidson. And for those that have seen the HBO comedy series Eastbound and Down starring Danny McBride, there was even a pitch, a commentator last year for the Diamondbacks during one of their games comparing Andrew Chafin to Kenny Powers, the character that is portrayed in the Eastbound and Down show. Andrew Chafin, now with the Detroit Tigers, and he was kind of a insurance guy there for pitching, just to have an extra relief pitcher, since I had five starters and at the time three relievers, so now I'm up to nine pitchers altogether. And, you know, Chafin is probably going to be one of the first guys that might go if I have to pick up another corner infielder. Again, if I need a first baseman, a third baseman due to the injury potential with Manny Machado, who's recovering from surgery, or, you know, Matt Olson, who's been an Ironman at first base, or the guy I have planned to back them up, Justin Turner, who, again, is 39 and is now going to be with the Toronto Blue Jays, so not sure how his role will be defined coming over for the new team, although he's going to qualify at all those positions. I see Turner almost being an everyday designated hitter at this particular time in his age. So Chafin is, kind of a insurance policy at pitcher and might be the first guy to be released in favor of a position player, specifically corner infielder. Jeremy Pena was on the roster, someone I made a trade for a couple seasons ago. The guy he traded for, ironically, was Devin Williams, who was, again, a good relief pitcher, and at the time setting up Josh Hader in Milwaukee, although at the time I made the trade, Hader had been traded to San Diego already, and Devin Williams, who had been a very good setup person, ended up with a closer role, and last year, at the end of the season, he ended up being injured, so he's not starting this year, so overall, a decent trade to get Pena, although last year, he didn't do as good as the year before, so his days of being kept by me, we'll have to wait and see. But he still comes in at round 23, where I can afford to keep a starter who's at least middle of the pack or better. He would be higher, except his stolen base total isn't quite so high as some of the other shortstops. Nonetheless, playing for a good team, Houston Astros, and pretty much an everyday player, doesn't really platoon. Michael Harris of Atlanta, I got him as a keeper, round 24. He's somebody who, again, I ended up trading in the season before, and I think it was Josh Hader that I traded, who, ironically, after I traded Josh Hader to another owner in the league, he sort of went cold, and after he was traded from Milwaukee to San Diego, it took him a number of games till he kind of came around, and Michael Harris was a very good, young, talented player with Atlanta, which has a star-studded lineup, and he bats much lower in the lineup, but again, it's so deep that they score a lot of runs and do get a lot of opportunities on offense. So he's a player I've kind of kept and built the team around. He's an everyday center fielder. And Bobby Miller was the last guy to keep, someone I picked up on the waiver wire last year, pitcher for the Dodgers, maybe their best potential young pitcher at this time. And, you know, the Dodgers always have great young talent. They have maybe the best farm system in baseball and, you know, arguably the best organization in major leagues. They win a lot of games. Hasn't translated to a lot of championships. They win the division almost every year. But sometimes a team that leads from wire to wire, their focus pretty much all season on getting to the playoffs, and then when they get there, they're just not ready to go because they've been playing kind of relaxed and very efficient the entire season. You know, last year were a team like the Diamondbacks who had to chase and were something like 15 games behind the Dodgers, who were so far out in first place that they didn't have really much intensity and a lot of reasons to really play their best because they had such a big lead that by the time the playoffs came in, the team that was fighting to get in the playoffs was the better team at that point in time. The Dodgers, again, went out and re-upped, picking up Shohei Ohtani, and he's going to be designated hitter. Another move that I did want to pick up, and this is kind of a spot where I think I failed myself in yesterday's draft, was having a little extra list of some of those secret hidden gem players that you might be able to get at a really good value in the later part of the draft. And I wanted to get Shohei Ohtani as a pitcher, because essentially there's two Ohtanis in the league. There's the batter and there's the pitcher. And many years ago, they used to just put the one guy in there and you got the benefit of both. But since he was a pitcher and an everyday designated hitter, he became a split player. And due to his getting Tommy John surgery, he won't be pitching for the Dodgers this season. And, you know, he shut down a season also pitching a year or two before. Not really sure the future of Ohtani as a pitcher. He's going to be a great hitter and more than likely will just be hitting home runs for the Dodgers for the next 10 years and may or may not go back to pitching. And if he does go back to pitching, I would not be surprised to see them just try to have him be a relief pitcher, come out of the bullpen, not necessarily a starter. And now that they have Yamamoto, another player from the Japanese system, a great player in Japan who's going to be making his debut in Major League Baseball. Yamamoto is a guy that I might be focusing on tomorrow when I have my draft at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Speaking of tomorrow, you can catch this show, Fantasy Sports Friday, in its replay slot, which will be 9 a.m. Pacific time, 12 noon Eastern time. And also, if you're up late tonight, 11 p.m. Pacific time, this show will replay tonight. You can always listen on demand. Should be up there as well. And then, so yeah, I mentioned not grabbing Ohtani as a pitcher and, you know, a couple other subtle players. I wanted to grab shortstop Mason Winn, who is a player in my minor league system and my other league. But it's interesting because outside of, let's see, Jeremy Pena and Blake Snell, there's maybe one other guy, George Soler. So that's only three players that I have on both of my team. So it'll be interesting. Will I have success with two teams? Will one team be better than the other? Again, like I say, a lot of times I try to draft a lot of the same players on both teams, basically because I do have a high opinion. And after doing a number of mock drafts, you can see kind of about what round to start, you know, reaching for some of those players. And when I say reach, I don't mean, you know, going too far, but I also have a philosophy. If there's a player you want, draft him when you think about it, because I almost guarantee if you don't, they're going to be picked up by another owner in your league. Case in point, Estuary Ruiz, picked up by a very smart owner named Tom, who was the champion of the auction league last year and played in the finals in this year. He does good in all of our leagues each and every year. So he was one step quicker than me in picking up that player. Overall, I think this team is going to do well with starting pitching. And, you know, if the batters stay healthy, I think it'll be a pretty good season overall. Looking forward to tomorrow's draft. It's going to be a little more intense. I need to make a list of basically the minor league players because they're going to show up on an available list just because the way Yahoo Sports has it formatted. And I don't want to be causing extra work for the commissioners and stat keepers of the league. And keeping those players out. And, you know, making sure that some of my players don't get nominated, like Mason Winn and Gavin Stone, also the Dodgers and Cardinals. I'm Jay Cruz, wrapping it up. Fantasy Sports Friday. We'll be back next week, right here, same time, on HealthyLife.net Radio.